Okay. Okay. The next speaker, it's a very hard act to follow, Rav Schechter, and that's why, it doesn't matter. Anyhow, even though it's a very hard act to follow, our next speaker is Dr. Baruch Sturman. Dr. Baruch Sturman is one of the co-founders of Ptil Tchelet. He has a degree in physics, was the head of research for Vonage, worked in many different areas in high tech, and all of that is nothing compared to what he has done for Am Yisrael and Tchelet. Besides being a friend, let me see here. Maybe we should do the thank yous now because they're all like so busy. But maybe I'll do the thank yous now. Yeah. So before Baruch starts, we in order to allow Rav Schechter to get out in time for his family simcha, we held off on thank yous. So first of all, thank you to the Achsanya, to Rabbi Marwick and President Dov Oken for the hospitality and hosting this event. Thank you to Shomrei Emuna office staff for the technical arrangements. Thank you to Mr. Hal Kane for waking up early this morning to bake and set up the coffee. To Avraham Klugman for the IT department. To Rabbi Steve and Fern Roth, who happens to also be Baruch's sister and brother-in-law, but that's just a coincidence, who also are very involved in Tchelet and are here. And, of course, father of Moshe Roth. And a special, special thank you. Is Moshe here? Moshe, please join us up here. Moshe, we'd like to present you, Moshe, for taking care of this in your community. We'd like to give you, of course, mitzvah, goreris mitzvah. That's one of our mottos. So we have some tchelets here and a tchelet t-shirt. We know you're into sports, so, you know. We did have a tchelet sport t-shirt with tchelets, but it kind of got out. So thank you to Moshe and Yocheved for all their hard work. Of course, before Baruch speaks, another special thanks. I don't think she's here. She's usually not. That is Judy, who's manning the table outside. Judy Taubes Sturman, Baruch's wife, co-author of The Rarest Blue. It's rare only because not enough Jews are wearing tchelet, and that we're working on changing. And what else can I say? Baruch is amazing. So here we go.
As you can imagine, it's pretty much impossible to follow Rav Schechter. In preparing what I wanted to say today, I really was thinking what could we possibly add to the lineup that we have and the great Talmidei Chachamim that are here in the room and that are going to be speaking. But I was thinking that maybe I could share with you some of the issues that over the last, let's say, 26 years, we've had to grapple with. Some of the halachic issues that we've had to think about, the decisions that we've had to make with respect to the halachot of dying tcheles. And, you know, this hasn't been done in a long time, and the questions that are in the Shulchan Aruch are, or really any of the other Rishonim and Achronim, they don't give you the hands-on how exactly do you die, what are the issues involved, how do you piskei halachot, and so on. So we've had to deal with some of these issues, and I want to share them with you. Now, you can imagine that some of the issues overlap with other areas in other halachos, other areas in halacha, but maybe specifically with the issues that are involved in making tzitzis in general. For example, you have issues of avodas yad, that they have to be made by hand, tzitzis. Lishma, they have to be made with the proper kavana. But what applies to the making of tzitzis in general also applies to the stage of the dying. So when we were trying to figure out how we could make efficiently do the dyeing, and we had to wonder about, can we use, for example, a pump, right, to pump the liquid through the wool? This was a question that applies equally to, can you do shazira with a machine, and can you do the teviyah, can you do the spinning of the wool with a machine? These are the same issues, and actually, even in other halachos, halachas of making matzah, you're allowed to do that machine-made, handmade. So these are issues that I'm going to leave because they're really in other places. Another issue that comes up, what about using processes, methods, chemicals that were not available in the olden days? This is also an issue that has parallels, at least in other halachas, in other areas. For example, we don't today use the precise methods that were used in ancient times for making the cloth of a Sefer Torah, or even the dyo, even the ink. We have other methods, and these are also dealt with. Are you allowed to? Not allowed to. When they first came up with gas ovens, there were many people that wouldn't eat matzah from a gas oven. They only would use wood-burning ovens. So these are other issues that are in other places. But I want to talk today about a very, very specific, unique sugya that only has to do with treles, and that is the question of double dipping. So you have a vat, you dip wool. Are you allowed to use the vat again for another batch of wool? And that's what we're going to go through. It's a very, very complicated sugya in the Gemara, and I hope that we'll be able to go through it. I'll do it in a kind of very general way because I really want to touch on a specific point when we get to it. So the Gemara that I'm going to quote, I hope that everybody has it in front of you. It's the Gemara Menachos, and it starts off with a story. Amar le Abaye le Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda. Abaye, of course, was an Amora. He lived in Bavel. And in Bavel, they didn't make treles. Treles needs the chilazon, which lives in the Mediterranean Ocean. So you make treles on the shores of the Mediterranean in Eretz Yisrael. And they used to export the treles to everybody else, all the other Jewish communities, including the Jewish community in Bavel. Abaye, who had never seen treles being made, he meets Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, who's one of the Nechuta, who goes back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. And immediately, the first thing he asks him, Hatechilta, hechetzavitavu. You in Eretz Yisrael, when you make your treles, exactly how do you dye it? Amalei, so Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda says back, well, this is what we do. Maitinan dam chilazon. We take the dam, as somebody mentioned here, the dam of the chilazon, or the abstract, or the essence, some kind of a chomer, of a substance that comes from the chilazon. Visamonim, chemicals. We put them all in a vat and we boil it up. And this is the ingredients, this is the recipe that Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda gives. Now, it's vague, but it happens to be very, very close to some external sources that we have. For example, the scientists that lived in the times of the Gemara, Pliny the Elder, Roman scientists. So we have other similar recipes for how you would dye with the chilazon, with the murex dye. And Pliny also mentions the next part of the Gemara. You see, because when you have the chilazon juice, if you will, you can't dye directly, right? Because it's in a chemical state which will not allow it to bond to the wool. You have to allow it to, first of all, to become a solution in water. It has to bond to water, and only at that point can you then dye the wool. And this is a process that can take anywhere from 9 to 14 days. Pliny mentions all of this, Vitruvius and other, Aristotle, they mention all of this. So how do you know when you've achieved the correct state so that you're ready to dye? You have to test the vat and make sure that you're ready to do the dyeing. And so now we have the second part of Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, who tells, once you're ready, you've done all of the preparations and you want to know if the dye is ready, now Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda goes on. Shakilna purta bebeita. You take a little bit of that dye and you put it into an eggshell. An eggshell was the ancient version of a paper cup. Right? So you have this thing, a disposable vessel, and you want to put it into it. So you take a little bit, vita'aminan luhu, and you test the dye to see if it's ready, but udra, with a little piece of wool, in the eggshell with the dye solution, a tiny little bit of the dye solution. And then says, Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, v'shadinan lehahu be'eta, you throw away the eggshell with the little bit of dye in it when you're done and you've done the testing, v'kalinan le'udra, and you burn the wool in a fire, and that's basically what we do. End of story. This is what Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda related to Abaye. The Gemara now goes on to say, aha, I can learn a lot of things from this story that Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda told us. Shema minatlas. I can learn three different things from this. First of all, shema minat te'ima psula. The testing wool, the wool that I used as the test, is pasul for tcheles. You can't use it for tzitzis. How do I know that? Because I throw it away or I burn it. Right? And then the other thing that I learned from it is that the be'inon tzvi lishma. I need to have the right kavana. I have to have the right intentions when I'm dyeing the wool, because this testing wool is no good. So, because I used it for the purpose of testing, not for the purpose of making tzitzit. Ushma mina ta'ama ti'ima posla. And I also learned that if I would test the big vat, if I would put and dip a tiny little bit of wool into the giant vat, that would puzzle the whole vat. Puzzle the whole vat. The whole vat now becomes usher to use, inacceptable to use for tcheles. How do I know that? Because I do this whole thing with the eggshell. I take a little bit out of it. All of this is what we learn out. And at the end of the whole day, then the Gemara goes on and says, well, you know what? Maybe it's really only two things that you learn, maybe one thing. But at the end of the day, a line later, kitznai. All of this is actually a machlokas tanoim. Te'ima psula, and most of the Rishonim learn that it's really ta'ama pasla, right? That the vat is no good even if you do a tiny little bit of testing in it. Mishum shene'emar kliel techeles. The pasuk says kliel techeles by the me'il of the Kohen Gadol, that beautiful garment that was all techeles. The pasuk uses the phrase kliel techeles. Kliel techeles means that ta'ima psula, you're not allowed to test the vat. Divrei Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. This is the words of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Rabbi Yochanan ben Davai Omer. Rabbi Yochanan ben Davai has a different opinion. Afilu marasheni sheba kosher. Even if you dip twice, that's okay. Mishum shenemar ushni tolas. The pasuk says tolat shani shni tolat. Don't read it shni ela sheni, which means you're allowed to dip twice. Okay, that's the Gemara that we have. So now what's going on here with this double dipping? Marasheni. What is the problem with dipping twice into the same vat? So the Rambam, of course, spells it out very, very clearly. The Rambam in Hilchos Tzitzis talks about the whole thing where Shmuel bar Yehuda said, and he gives exactly all of the recipes. The Rambam, by the way, I'm not going to do justice to this whole sugya. So I photocopied on the other side the sugya in translation with all of the notes from Schottenstein, and I really urge everybody to go home, take a little while, and you'll learn the sugya in its depth. Rishonim and Achronim, a lot of issues and difficulties here. So let's go on, though. The Rambam says that you have everything that I mentioned, everything that you were supposed to do, the whole recipe, and then he goes on to explain that testing business. And listen to what the Rambam has to say. Hilchot Tzitzis Perek Beis. Hatcheles shel tzitzit tzricha tzvi'a lishma. Tcheles that's made for tzitzit has to be done with the proper intentions, with the right kavana. V'im tzva'a shelo lishma psula. And if you had the wrong intentions, or you didn't have the correct intentions, and every day in our factory, not only do we actually say, and we have on the wall, l'shem mitzvah tzitzis, we say it at the beginning of the day and periodically throughout the day to make sure that we have the right kavana. But beyond that, we actually sign a contract. Every morning, you sign in, hareini ani oseh tcheles l'shma. The Rav Rubin, who gives the hechsher on our tcheles, wants to really be sure that everybody has the kavana, the right kavana, so we sign it day in and day out. So it says the Rambam, and if you didn't have the right kavana, then no good, psula. V'hayora sheyesh b'hatzeva, and the vat which contains the dye, im tzava ba me'at semer levodko, im hu yafeh im lav. What if I use that vat and I test it a tiny little bit to see if the tcheilos is ready, if the dye is ready to dye? If I did that, nifsila hayora kula. The entire vat, 10,000 gallons of dye, you have to throw it away. Now this dye was worth, let's just remember, 20 times its weight in gold. So you could be quite sure that they did a lot more than tell people to have kavana. There was probably somebody there who was quite making sure because he didn't want to lose all of that dye. So what do you do? Like we learned, you take a little bit of the dye out of the yora, b'chli katan, in a small little vessel, maniach bo tzemer shebodek bo, and there in that little vessel, in the tiny little bit of dye, you test it, v'sorefet shebadak, now you burn the wool that you used to test, sharei nitzba levdika, because it was used for testing and not for tzitzis making. V'shofech hatzeva shebekli shebadak bo, and you have to throw away that little bit of dye and not throw it back into the vat, Sheharei ta'amo psalo, like we said, because you've used that and tested it, and it's no longer valid, it's no longer able to be used. V'tzovea tcheles b'sharet tzeva shelo nifgam. And you dye the tcheles and all the rest of the vat, which is still there. Very nice. So what's the Rambam's problem with all of this double dipping? What's the issue? He says it straight out. The issue is one of kavana. If you have the wrong kavana, then you ruin the entire dye. I dip to test, wrong kavana, all of the rest of the dye is no good. So let me ask you a question.
Test this for this question.
You would think so. But nonetheless, even though the testing really is for the purpose of making tcheles, nonetheless, I guess because you're not sure, over the 9 to 14 days, you would be testing constantly. And most of the time, you would be thinking, well, it may not be ready. That is the chiddush of the Gemara. The chiddush is that if you had the wrong kavana, Tosos talks about it. You have two kavanas, it's no good. Anyway, this is what the Rambam seems to say. Now, let me ask you a question. So what if I took a batch of wool? And I say, l'shei mitzvah tzitzis, l'shei mitzvah tcheles. And I dip that wool into the vat, and I take out the wool, and now I have beautiful tcheles lishma. And now I have another batch of wool. And I want to put that into the vat, because there's more dye left in there. And this dye is worth 20 times its weight in gold. So I want to get everything that I can, every last drop of dye left. So the first batch of wool was kosher lishma, beautiful. The second batch of wool now, I also say, l'shem yitzvah tzitzis, l'shem yitzvah tzitzis, and I dip the second batch in. Should that be okay, or is that also no good? Should be fine. And in fact, that's Tosos's opinion. Tosos holds exactly like the Rambam. And Tosos, right there on the page, he says, da'afilu me'a pa'amim l'shmo, d'mashma d'kosher. Tulsus' opinion is you could die once, twice, 10 times, 100 times, as long as you want. Every time you say l'shem yitzvah tzitzis, and you can die as many times as you want. That's the opinion of Tosfot. That's not the opinion of Rashi. And Rashi talks about something that's a little bit difficult to understand. Rashi says, Mishum shenemar klil tcheles, kol tcheles be'inon. Sheyehe kol ikar mare hachilazon b'tzemer, shelo yehe davar acher tzavua ba mitchilata. You're not allowed to have anything dyed in the vat other than tcheles. And that tcheles has to have all of the power, the full essence of the chilazon. The minute that you take even the tiniest little bit of wool to test, you have diluted somehow or another from the power of that chilazon dye, and that's no good for tcheles because, again, the pasuk says klil tcheles. Now, what would Rashi say about whether or not you could dip two times, one batch and then another batch? I think it's clear. And it certainly was clear to Tosfot And if anybody wants to look, you can see in Divrei Maskil Mishum Shenemar in Tosfot. Tosfot says it specifically: Perish Bekuntris Shelo Yehei Davar Acher Tzavua Bamitchila. You can't dye anything else in the vat Vafilu Tzemer. Only the dip of Tchelas, only the batch that you're going to use Tchelas for. Vehushkari Marisheni. That's what's called Marisheni. Mashma de im tzava ba shnei pa'amim zeachar zeh pasul. Afilu shma. If you would dip twice, double dipping, no good, even if it's lishma. Now that is the way that Tosfos understood Rashi. And he asks questions on it. He doesn't accept Rashi's position. Chidushei Rashba, which was probably not written by the Rashba Menachot, also asks questions on Rashi. Rishonim, Achronim, have a lot of problems with Rashi. But what exactly Rashi means may be subject to debate. But what Rashi said seems to be clear, certainly to Tosfot, certainly to all of the Rishonim and the Achronim. Double dipping is not allowed. You dip once, that's okay. If you did it lishma, you can use that, but you can never dip twice. And so was the opinion basically of every Rishon and every Achron up until the late 1880s when the Radziner Rebbe came along. And the Radziner Rebbe learns this Rashi in one of the Sfarim that Rav Shechter alluded to. The Radziner Rebbe wrote three Sfarim. Sfunei Tmunei Chol, before he went on his great adventure looking for Tcheles, and he tries to explain what it is that I'm looking for. That's Sfunei Tmunei Chol. What are the simonim of the Chilazon? Then at the end of his life, he writes a sefer called Eina Tcheles, which tries to answer up all of the objections. But in between those, he never saw that published. It was published by his son posthumously. The Rebbe died in 1891. He never really was able to... He did see Tcheles being made, though. And after he gets back from Italy with what he believes to be the proper Chilazon, but before he dies D-Y-E-S, the Tcheles, he writes a sefer on the halachos of Tcheles and the halachos of dying Tcheles, and that's called Ein HaTcheles, and that sefer is an absolute masterpiece of Lamdos. It's absolutely amazing, the brilliance of Rav Gershon Henoch. So Rav Gershon Henoch asks the question, tries to learn this sugya through in Rashi. Rav Gershon Henoch says, Rashi can only make sense if you think about it in a specific way. What does it mean, the essence of the Chilazon, the power of the Chilazon? That's only manifest in one way. What is that? The color of the dye. And so what Rashi has to mean, says the Radziner Rebbe, is the dye color affected or not affected? And so the Radziner says, B'tzeva chama, the Radziner Rebbe had experience in dyeing. So he says, if I take the dye, the hot vat of dye, now his dye was of course something different, it was Prussian blue, but nonetheless, nir'eh b'chush, with your own eyes, you can experientially, empirically see, she'eino moshech v'koleit ha'tzeva b'pa'am ha'rishona. The first time you dye, it doesn't use up all of the dye that's left in the vat. V'afilu pa'am shnia v'shlishit, tzovat b'mare yafeh v'chazaka, Kipam Rishona. The second time you dye a new batch of wool, the third time you dye a new batch of wool, the color is absolutely identical, first, second, third time. Vilohuchacha marita klal. And there's no fading, there's no difference between the first time, second time, and third time. Ve'ech shayach lomar dlo hevi kliel techeles. So how could you say that's not kliel techeles? You can't tell the difference with your eyes between the first time, the second time, the third time. So you can't tell that. What else could Rashi possibly mean? And so the Radziner says, as long as you keep dying, until you start to see that the dye is coming out weak. When you start to see that the dye is fading and weak, then you have a problem of marasheni. That's the way the Radziner explains Rashi. You're asking on the Radziner. I can't answer for the Radziner. I can say this. The Radziner is so brilliant that when you finish learning the Radziner, you come away and you basically say, there is no other way to understand Rashi. And everybody who understood Rashi up until then for 800 years, where the assumption was that Rashi says what he means, which is if you die twice, and certainly Tosfot, if you die twice, that's Aser. By the time you finish learning the Radziner, not only is it mutter, but it's a chiyuv. You have to die as many times as you can. And so, Radziner Tcheles, to this day, when they die their Tcheles, they die once, twice, three times, as many times as they want. Until every single time they say L'shem Mitzvah Tzitzis, they have the right kavana. So they don't have a problem with Tosfot. They don't have a problem with the Rambam. And with as far as Rashi goes, that's the way the Radziner of Gershon Henoch understood Rashi.
But that's ridiculous. Because, obviously, the chemical dye present, and I'm not going to talk about Prussian glue, I'm going to talk about chelet, genuine chelet. The chemical dye present is being taken up.
Yes, it is. But the question that the Radziner says is it's not looking under some kind of a chemical test to see what the ratio of dye to this or that is. What matters is your eyes. If you see that the first one comes out the same as the second, by the way, let me tell you this. It's true. When we die, if we die a second time, if we were to die a second time, we could actually see that the dye comes out pretty much the same the first time and the second time. So what you're saying is true from a reality standpoint. But reality, as far as the Radziner are concerned, really is only a question of what you see with your own eyes. And the first, second, third time shouldn't make a difference. And the Radziner is very, very, very compelling and brilliant, as he always is. And so, when the Radziner, who had the last word on this, in the 1890s, when they were making Tcheles and on through till today, Radziner Chassidim, double dip, again, Marasheni is a problem only when it becomes, and that's the way the Radziner understands, Marasheni, when it's a secondary color. That's the way he learns it. Okay. So what do we do?
Sheni is another secondary color, not a second dip.
Yes.
Did you see that in Rashi?
Okay, so I'll leave the questions to the end because I want to get to what I want to make sure that I get to what I want to say. What do we do? We do not dip twice at Petil Tchelet. And the reason is because in spite of the Radziner's question, how else could you possibly learn Rashi? There actually is another way to learn Rashi. And certainly Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Rav Eliyahu Tevger, who is the founder of our organization and who we look to our posek for everything with respect to Tcheles, Rav Eliyahu Tevger says, that's not the way to learn what's going on here in this sugya. You see, we don't know a lot about Tcheles from the Torah. Tcheles is mentioned, I think, some 49 times throughout Tanakh. Never does it tell us the color. Never does it tell us it comes from a chilazon. Doesn't say much about Tcheles. But there is one time the Tcheles is described. And that's actually in Megillas Esther. Mordechai yatsa milifnei ha-melech. What's the rest of the pasuk? Levush malchut Tcheles. The one thing we know about Tcheles was that it was levush malchut. Now that idea of Tcheles as being levush malchut has to now inform you every other one of the 48 times that Tcheles is mentioned in Tanakh. You have to keep that in the back of your mind. You should hear that little song, Mordechai yatsa, in your head every single time you read the word Tcheles. And you should be thinking about it in the context of Levush Malchut. Says Rav Tevger, Levush Malchut, the king, doesn't get served leftovers. The king gets the first cut. And so the Levush Malchut is what's being told to you from the Pasuk. And therefore, I'll give you an example. Chadash, Bikurim, Reishis HaGeiz. There are many, many different places where the Torah wants the first for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the Melech, and certainly for the Melech Malchei HaMelechim. I think the best example is my brother-in-law. I was speaking to my brother-in-law, Rabbi Taubes, about this on Thursday. I went over it with him. He said, oh, the best example has to be the Shemen Zayis that you use for the menorah. What's the halacha? Do you remember? The first drop, only the first drop is kosher for the shemen zayis, for the menorah. So let me ask you a question. Is there a difference chemically between the first drop and the second drop? Could you, under some microscope or under some kind of any kind of chemical test, could you tell the difference between the first drop and the second drop? No. But the king uses the first drop. When I heard this from Rav Tevger, I said, you know what? I'm going to suggest that that's actually the drasha of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Because what does he learn it from? From what phrase? Kliel techeled. Kliel techeled, kliel can be meant, can be kulo, all through and through techeled, right? But maybe kliel means something else. Kliel teferet biroshon atata. What does kliel there mean? A crown. Listen to these two midrashim. The word kliel can also mean a crown. Hashem yimloch li'olam va'ed. God will be the ruler over the universe forever, is. The Targum Yonason says, D'dilei hu kliel malchusa. To him, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, belongs the crown of malchus, of kingship. V'hu melech malchin ba'alma hadein v'dilei malchusa. And another, from a few parshas ago, if you remember, there's another time that the phrase kliel techeles is used, not only by the Me'il, one more time in the Torah, by the covering of the Aron. All of the other vessels in the Mishkan, when they had to travel, you did what made sense. You put a very, very precious covering on them, techeles, argaman, whatever it was, and then you covered them with a nice waterproof bag of or tachash to make sure that no matter whether it was raining or not raining or dusty sandstorms, they wouldn't get ruined. By the Aron, first you put the or tachash, and then you put on top of it a covering of techeles. Kliel techeles is used in that phrase. Here's the Medrash. Rav Shimon Omer, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, Shlosha Ktarim Heim, Keter Torah, Keter Kahuna, V'Keter Machut, V'Keter Shem Tov Ole Al Gabehen, the Keter, he's playing on the word Kliel techeles. Kliel meaning a Keter. Maaseh Aaron, Kineged Balei Torah, Shem Sifunim, and so on. So for somebody like Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, who was looking at the Pasuk and saying Kliel techeles, the Kliel techeles means Bigdei Malchus, the Keter. It reminds me of the story with Archimedes, when the king of Syracuse was suspicious of his crown maker, that he was using a little bit of copper instead of gold. He tasked the great scientist Archimedes to figure out if he was being frauded, if he used a little bit of brass or copper instead of gold. And Archimedes, in his famous experiment, he was in the bathtub and he saw the water spill out, and he figured his law of buoyancy and so on. He went naked through the streets of Syracuse exclaiming, "Eureka, I found it." So I'm thinking to myself, as they're dragging that crown maker off to be killed, because it ends up that Archimedes proved that he was frauding the king and he was using a tiny little bit of an impurity, I'm thinking, that crown maker, why he was screaming out, but the Radziner says that all that matters is what it looks like. You can't tell the difference, what it's looking like. Archimedes' principle shouldn't be able to be used here. That's not the issue. But nonetheless, the king does not use any impurities. Bigdei Malchus has to be pure, unadulterated. And that is the way Rav Eliyahu Tevger learns the sugya, and that's the way we learn the sugya. And here we're machmir, psil techeles. We are machmir not to double dip. We dip once. And this, by the way, explains something else. Rav Shechter made mention of it. Radzin Chasidim, the Rebbe also talks about this. They dip the string, and when they take it out, because again, with Rambam, it's very, very difficult to make half a string. So in Radzin, Radziner holds like the Rambam, the Radziner would dip the strings, and you come out with a core of white. We're machmir not to do that either, and it's extremely, extremely difficult. We have to dye the threads, or the wool, the threads, before the shazira, the tiny little thin threads of wool, and they rip all the time. It's hard to get them on and off. Complicates the issue, makes it more difficult. But our techeles is through and through and through techeles. And again, the issue is, as Joel sometimes mentions, I've heard him say, it doesn't say techeles plated strings. It says Klil Techelet, Kulo Techelet, and Techelet of Malchut. You can be sure that the king would never have anything other than 24 karat Techelet, through and through Techelet, and that's what we're machmer on too. And this is something, by the way, and I'll finish with this. It adds to the complexity of the dye process, absolutely. Subsequently, it adds to the cost of the strings. And we're torn by this, because on the one hand, we want to drop the price as best as we can. We don't want anyone not to be able to afford to keep the mitzvah. On the other hand, we don't want to compromise. The nature of the mitzvah is to wear big day malchut, and compromising on quality, whether that's physical quality or whether it's spiritual quality, we don't want to compromise. It would defeat the purpose of the mitzvah. So we're torn by this, and we have to deal with these issues as best as we can. And this is the point I want to just end with. Big day malchut, and Techelet being the symbol of Malchut. The Ramak, Rav Moshe Cordovero, who lived in Tzfat, a little before the Arizal, and also had a whole theory of Kabbalah. He writes a sefer called the Pardes Rimonim. One of those sections in the Pardes Rimonim is called Sha'ar HaGvanim, the gates of color. And in that, the Ramak talks about each of the Sfirot, the emanations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, different ways that we appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chesed, Gvura. And he speaks about what colors are associated with each and every sphera. And I don't have to tell you that you can imagine. Tcheles, of course, is associated with the sphera of Malchus, the lowest of the Sfirot, the sphera of Malchus, of kingship. And I once heard a beautiful idea about why that is. Malchut is just on the border between the spiritual, between the physical, between the heavens, between the earth. And Techelet represents, within it, the color of Techelet, represents the ability to hold two diametrically opposed opposites. If you think about it, Techelet is the color of the sky, which goes up to the highest heights, Amromim. It's also the color of the sea, which is the Tahom, and goes down to the deepest depths. Techelet is the color of fire. The inside of a flame is the blue of Techelet. The Chassidim talk about this a lot. The Zohar talks about this. Techelet is also the color of water. Techelet can be both fire and water, can be both heaven and sea, can be both earth and sky, can be both spiritual and physical. And I believe that that's why we wear the Techelet right on the border, which is both outside and inside. Techelet has the ability to unify. And as Joel said before, Rav Tevger, when we first started this adventure 26 years ago, he said to us, you know, Techelet has a very inglorious, inauspicious beginning. The minute that the mitzvah was given in last week's parasha, by the time we get to Mincha, Korach is already using Techelet for Machlokes. Techelet, the minute it was born in Machlokes. Rav Tevger said, if we're going to be successful, we have to be mitaken that. We have to try as best as we can to minimize the Machlokesim around Techelet. And to tell you that Techelet has a Machlokes and Machlokesim around it, arguments this way, that way, but they're not, please God, they're not machlokesim like Korach v'Chadaso. They're machlokes l'shem shamayim, like Hillel and Shammai, Rav Schechter mentioned. Three strings, four strings, these are great arguments to have about Techelet. So you're going to hold like the Rambam, you're going to hold like the Ravid, you're going to hold like the Chinuch, like this, like that. These are beautiful, beautiful machlokes. And even to the point, you're going to accept the Techelet, you're not going to accept the Techelet. Let's learn all of these issues. Let's learn through these issues. The Gemara Menachos should come to life with all of its arguments. But never, 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 chas v'shalom, that it should be a source of disunity. But rather, a source of achdut, to bring together all kinds of different types of Jews from all different places in the world, all talking about Techelet, arguing about Techelet, and thinking about Techelet, and Mirtz Hashem also wearing Techelet.
We're going to allow a few more moments for questions, and then at 11 o'clock we have a coffee break. We will replenish the Danish for those who are worried. Okay. And exactly at 11 o'clock also, we will have a live demonstration of the making of tchelet from the snails, and you'll see all those things that Baruch talked about. Halacha l'maisa. So any questions, feel free. Go ahead.
I'm not sure if this is the right point in this presentation today to ask a question about the CPS analysis, because all the discussions about Europe. Is this a good time to address that?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. Just quickly. Let's go.
Yeah. Not for me. I'm asking. Okay.
What do you want to know?
Why are we talking about the other theories?
Okay.
When the Radziner Rebbe brought back the sepia from Italy, most of the people were against his tchelas. Some of it, as I mentioned yesterday when I spoke, some of it was la'inyan. There were real arguments against it. For example, if you take Radzin tchelas, it fades, right? You can wash it out. Now the Radziner Rebbe, believe me, his lamdus is unbelievable, from a different world. He could take brown ink and he could make it blue. He could take Rashi who says Aser and turn him into Mutter. And so the problem of fading Tchelas, even though the Rambam says Shomeret Yofya Velo Tishtaneh, easy for the Radziner Rebbe to deal with. So the Radziner Rebbe deals with all of these different questions. But still there were questions. Radziner Rebbe brings back dead squids, and the people talk about the fact that it has to be Chai, it has to be alive, and so on and so forth. But there were arguments back and forth, and Rav Herzog came along in 1914 and wrote his doctorate on tchelas, and he took the squid strings from the Radziner Hasidim. Of course, the Rebbe was not alive anymore, but his sons and grandchildren were still dying tchelas, and he sent them off to be examined in three different laboratories, by Paul Friedlander in Germany, who was the greatest chemist of the time, by the Goblins Institute, which was the greatest chemical laboratory of its time, and then also in England where he lived, he also gave it to some chemists to look at, and all three came back and said, this is from inorganic material, which means it does not come from any live substance. It's a chemical called Prussian blue, a synthetic blue. Of course, Rav Herzog couldn't understand how that could possibly be, right? This comes from a squid, what the Radziner Rebbe is going to lie to us? But anyway, he sent away to the Radziner Hasidim, and Rav Herzog talks about it in his book, and he says, I got the dye back, and he brings back the entire chemical procedure. The dyers explain it. Because of the way that they were processing the dye at such a high temperature, they were really synthesizing Prussian blue, but they didn't know it, and they were using the tcheles, the chilazone, sepia extract, but it really didn't have anything to do with the sepia. So Rav Herzog categorically decided this couldn't be the chilazon that everybody's worried about, that you have to only use a chilazon, not use a chilazon, when anything would have used, you could use fingernails, chopped liver, gefilte fish, whatever you would have wanted, it would have done the same exact thing, and therefore, at least according to Rav Herzog, this disproved the Radziner Tchelet altogether. But again, the Radziner Hasidim to this day still keep their minhag of keeping to the sepia.
Okay, yes, another question over here.
You mentioned before we don't talk double dip. The thing is, if there's sheep that you could use double dip, wouldn't you have something derived to so at least to be evident, so if you can't afford it, why wouldn't you do it?
That's a great question. And really, at this point now, if we could have some Godel Hador who would say to us, I want 1,000 sets of tchelas double dipped, if you'll give me a good price, that would actually be something that we would consider. But we have something else that we have to consider. Tchelas is new. People are looking for every reason to be worried about using tchelas or not using tchelas. We want to be sure that at least at this point, halachically, we're A-OK, 100% kosher l'gabei the halacha. Were we to come out with tchelas, that is, second-hand tchelas, b'dieved tchelas, and we'd have two types of tchelas that we have, kosher tchelas, not so kosher, we're not machine matzah yet. The day will come, mirtz Hashem, when we'll have, you know, you'll have tchelas on the thing, you'll have avodas yad, and you'll have machine, and you'll have marisheni, and you'll have all kinds of other ones, but we're not there yet. We have to be extra, extra special and careful to make sure that we don't ruin anybody's...
Yes.
How are you defining the term double dipping? Because it's very
And we are makpid. It's exactly true. And that's the best possible thing would be in indigo dyeing on wool is always to dip once, dip again until you get to the right color. That would be the ideal if we could do that. But we're extremely, extremely makpid here not to take, certainly not a second batch of wool and use it, but even the first batch that we do, if we have a problem, we take out the batch and we see that the wool is spotted or it didn't get to the right color, we make an entire new vat of dye and dip that again in there. I just want to say a little bit of irony. What do we do with our marasheni? And you see in Tosos, and you'll see from the whole sugya, that marasheni, this whole thing is learned out from Kliel Techeles, which is by the Big Day Kahuna, right? And so for tzitzis, we learn it out from the Big Day Kahuna. It happens to be that Rav Ariel from Achon HaMikdash is not makbid on marasheni. So the second dip that we have, we give to Machon HaMikdash, and what do they make out of it? The me'il, of all things. So the me'il that you'll go see in Mirtz Hashem, in Yerushalayim, in Machon HaMikdash, is actually made with Marasheni Tcheles. We won't use it for tzitzis, but Rav Ariel is using it for the...
One last question. We just have to allow another one.
In engineering, we distinguish between batch processes and continuous processes. Couldn't you have a long trough with the dye and continuously pushing new
yeah.
on one end and pull it out on the other end?
All good. Yes, these are great ideas, and we actually toyed with a lot of these ideas, and we had the idea of maybe having a pump, but then we had the problem of the pump may not necessarily be avodas yad. So then we started thinking that maybe what we'll do is we'll connect an electric pump to a manual pump, start by manually pumping, and then continue with some of the with the automated process. Of course, when we did that, the whole thing exploded and we got dye all over ourselves. So that didn't work out exactly the way we wanted to. There's no question there is room for improving the efficiency of the methods that we use. We have to be very, very careful, of course, to make sure that the halachos are in line and that we're not doing anything that's in any way b'dieved. But yes, is the short answer.
Okay, I'd like to thank Baruch for your words. As always, Baruch is always finding a new chiddush, and I've known Baruch for before chiddush. That's hard to imagine. More than 26 years ago, and never ceases to surprise me with new chiddushim. It's always nice. Again, everyone's invited outside for coffee, refreshments, and there will be a dyeing demonstration to the left of the coffee. Yeah, we will start again promptly at 11:30. We'll continue promptly at 11:30 with unbelievable shiurim.